I like the country, I like it fine. My kind of living, right down the line. Hospitality, you'll find it here. The country folk got time to smile, got time to have a beer.
And the beer they like is Melton Bitter. Brewed to taste a whole lot better. Brewed to taste the way a good beer should be. If you know beer, there's no denying. There's no beer so satisfying. Melton Bitter, nothing better.
I like country, it's my style. Country people got something worthwhile. Hospitality, you'll find it here. The country folk got time to smile, got time to have a beer.
And the beer they like is Melbourne Bitter. Brewed to taste a whole lot better. Brewed to taste the way a good beer should. If you know beer, there's no denying. There's no beer so satisfying. Melbourne Bitter, nothing better.
Now that's what I call a beer.
So, welcome to Rangers Oz. I'm Harlequin, your guest speaker for tonight. Well, actually, I'm the only speaker for tonight, so sucked in, you get stuck with me. I don't know what else I'm about to say about that. Straight in the news then. This was sent in by my partner, isn't she lovely? Scientists are due to axe alternative medicine courses. This was the Brisbane Times on the 26th of January 2012. More than 400 doctors, medical researchers and scientists have formed a powerful lobby group to pressure universities to close down alternative medicine degrees. Almost one in three Australian universities now offer courses in some form of alternative therapy or complementary medicine, including the traditional Chinese herbal medicine, chiropractics, homeopathy, naturopathy, reflexology, and aromatherapy. But the new group, called the Friends of Science in Medicine, wrote to the two vice chancellors this week, warning that giving undeserved credibility to what in many cases would better be described as quackery, and by failing to champion evidence-based science and medicine, universities are trashing their reputation as bastions of scientific rigor. The group, which names world-renowned scientist Sir Gustav Nassel and the creator of the cervical cancer vaccine, Professor Ian Fraser, among its members, is also campaigning for private health insurance to providers to stop providing rebates on alternative health for alternative medical treatments. Co-founder of the group, Emeritus Professor John Dwyer, of the University of New South Wales, Boo Hiss, is also a government advisor on consumer health fraud, says it was distressing that 19 universities were now offering degrees in pseudoscience. It is deplorable when we didn't realize how much concern there was out there for university reputations until we tapped into it. I think I read that wrong. I'll try again. It's deplorable that we didn't realize how much concern there was out there for university reputations until we tapped into it, Professor Dwyer said. We're saying enough is enough. Taxpayers' money shouldn't be wasted funding these courses, nor should the government health insurance rebates be wasted on this nonsense. Government Dwyer said it was particularly galling that such courses were growing in popularity while at the same time the federal government was looking at ways to get the Therapeutic Goods Administration to enforce tougher proof of efficacy criteria for complementary medicines, providing the release of a highly critical review of the Australian National Audit Office last September. Who even knew we had a National Audit Office? Of particular concern to the group is increase in chiropractic courses following a recent announcement of a new chiropractic science degree by the Central Queensland University. More than 30 scientists, doctors, and community advocates wrote to a vice-chancellor and health science deans at the university voicing their concerns, which lay the foundations of the Friends of Science in Medicine. The groundswell of protest from the medical professional comes after a decision in Britain that means that this year it will no longer be possible to receive a degree from a publicly funded university in areas of alternative methods, including homeopathy and naturopathy. That's a really hard word to say if you're a Harlequin. German and British medical insurers are also in the process of removing alternative therapies from the list of treatments that they will cover. Australia's vice chancellors will meet in March, and Professor Dwyer says his group is aiming for a commitment from them to endorse health courses only with evidence-based science. The spokesman for the University of Australia said tertiary institutions were self-accrediting. They have the autonomy to ensure the quality and relevance of the courses they offer, he said. The Tertiary Education Quality and Standards Agency, and government bodies have to regulate higher education, refused to comment. Most health funds pay rebates for alternative therapies under top cover policies. Private Healthcare Australia did not return the Herald's calls. Well, that's because you're the bloody Brisbane Times. Yeah, I don't know. My partner sent in, so yeah. All credit for my partner who sent me the email with the thing. She sent me most of the news this week, apart from one that Kev sent me. Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, the basis of basically all modern medicine is herbalism. And, of course, we all know where herbalism started off. That was a bunch of people who knew a bit about herbs, and they were trying to help people, and then they were all killed for being witches. So we kind of know where that started from, and we know where we went to. And if we look at the history of Western medicine, we can see an awful lot of failure in it. And if we also look at the history of, say, something like Chinese complementary medicine, we see a lot of things that basically can be proven. You know, and we see a lot of things that aren't proven because they don't want to be. You know, Chinese medicine is used in China as a form of medicine. It's used as in conjunction with modern Western medicine. So yeah, I think they're pissing in the wind on their own boots on that one. But there you go. Yes, onwards and upwards. This is my only bit of foreign news for the week, and I only put it in because it's really cool. It's not really foreign. I mean, it's New Zealand, they're foreign to me, but, you know, whatever. The BBC reported on the 2nd of February, supergiant crustacean found in the deepest oceans. And you have to go and look at the picture, it's really cool. A huge crustacean has been found lurking 7 kilometres down in the waters off the coast of New Zealand. This creature, called a supergiant, is a type of amphipod, which are normally 2 to 3 centimetres long. But these beasts discovered in the Kermadec Trench are more than 10 times bigger, the largest found being 34 centimetres. Alan Jameson of the University of Aberdeen's Ocean Lab said it's a bit like finding a foot-long cockroach. Now, if you found a foot-long cockroach, I'm pretty sure you would get on the front of the Daily Spectator or something like that, but, you know, that didn't happen because it's from the ocean. I stopped and thought, what on earth was that? This amphipod was far bigger than I ever thought possible. That's what you'd think if you were a marine biologist, I'm sure, because you think about these things. The strange animals were found using a large metal trap. Isn't it funny how things change when we get underwater? A large metal trap was used. Different, hey? Which had been equipped with a camera, not so it's an expensive metal trap, housed in sapphire glass to keep it safe from the high pressures in the deep sea. Well, that's pretty cool. I don't know what sapphire glass is, but it sounds like fun. Can I add some? I can make a box. We can go see. Yay. 7 specimens were caught in the trap, and 9 were captured on film by the team from the University of Aberdeen in Scotland and the National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research, the NIWA, in New Zealand. The largest specimen brought back to the ship measured 28 centimetres in length, while the biggest spotted on the camera was 34 centimetres long. Conspicuous animal. The headlines on the BBC have just gotten fucking so much worse over the years. Amphipods have been found living in large numbers at the very bottom of ocean trenches, deep, narrow valleys in the seafloor. They can plunge down nearly 11 kilometres. Well, that's not very far if you think about it in distance, but it is a very long far. It is a great distance if you think about it going down. The creatures are small, but extremely active, and they seem to thrive in this place where the pressure is 1,000 times greater than at sea level. The name Superjump was first coined after large specimens were caught in the 1980s off the coast of Hawaii. Aloha. They have been seen since in the Antarctic, where they grew up to 10 centimetres, but these are now dwarfed by this latest find. Dr. Ashley Broden from NIWA said, "It just goes to show that the more you look, the more you find." Well, it's funny that, isn't it? For such a large and conspicuous animal to go unnoticed for so long is just testament to how little we know about life in New Zealand's most deep and unique habitat. I would say that it is far beyond that, and how little we know about the universe in itself. Especially the big blue green ball planet we live on. Over a few years, scientists have been surprised by what life is, by the life that is found in ocean trenches. Well, of course, because it's not like we see it every fucking day. These deep sea spots are once thought to be barren, too dark, cold, and too much pressure for anything to survive. Well, how dumb are we? Researchers have found a wealth of life in the deepest of the deep. As well as amphipods, they've also uncovered prawn-like creatures called isopods and snailfish that live 7,700 metres down, that's 7.7 km for everyone who lives in fucking metric land. And there's some interesting fish pictures and stuff you can go and watch on the BBC website. Boo, here's BBC. I think Kev sent me this. I believe it was Kev who sent me this one. Okay, send me two then. Thanks, Kev. You're a legend. This is on Slashdot. Aussies could use elephants to fight invasive species. We have a lot of invasive species, so I wonder which one they're talking about. A type of invasive African grass, is a major cause of wildfires in Australia, because the grass just gets too excited and bursts into flames spontaneously. The giant gamba grass is too large for cattle and native marsupial grazers to eat. But David Bowman, a professor of the environmental change biology, I don't know how the hell that works, at the University of Tasmania, that's the way it doesn't work then, has a plan. He says that elephants or rhinoceros could eat the pest grass. Only other methods likely to control gamba grass involve using chemical or physical clearing of the land, which would destroy the habitat. Using mega herbivores may ultimately be more practical and cost-effective, as it would help conserve the animals that are threatened by poaching in their native environments. He said, this plan makes you wonder how big a Chinese needle snake can grow. I don't quite get the reference at the bottom, but yeah. Hey, you know, I'm all for fucking having more rhinoceroses and elephants in Australia. We need more. They're sorely lacking. I think it would be fun. I think I found this one. Yeah, I think I did. This is on the CTVCA website. I think CTV is Canadian Television. It's via the Associated Press, so we know what it's about. It's the 26th of January, 2012. Police escort Australian PM through security scare. And you really have to go and look at the picture, because the picture is the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen, and also one of the darkest fucking amazing lies I've ever seen. Canberra, Australia. Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard stumbled and was caught by a security guard as riot police helped her force a path through a crowd of rowdy protesters. Keep in mind, they said, rowdy protesters. A crowd of rowdy protesters. Following a ceremony to mark the Australia's National Day Thursday. Well, it wasn't this Thursday, it was a long time ago. It wasn't very fun. Well, it was for me, because I went out with my family, but I think everyone else had a really shit time. She was unharmed and later remarked that she was made of pretty tough stuff. You know, there's your fucking soundbite for the week, Julia Gillard. And commended the police for their actions. Fascist bully boys unite! Some 200 supporters of indigenous rights that had surrounded Canberra ate around a Canberra restaurant and banged on its windows while Gillard and opposition leader Tony Abbott were inside officiating an award ceremony. So, like, why in God's name was Julia Gillard, the head of the Labor Party, officiating anything with the head of the opposition, Liberal Party in Australia being the opposition, Tony Abbott? Why were they in the same room? They're not supposed to like one another, yeah? They should have been throwing rocks at one another in the play yard, yeah? Around 50 police escorted the political leaders to a side door, from the side door to a car. Julia Gillard stumbled, losing a shoe. What is she, fucking Cinderella? Her personal security guard wrapped his arms around her and supported her to the waiting car, shielding her from angry crowd. It's like that fucking film with what's her name? You know, the one with the really crap bloke, and it's just terrible. It's got Whitney Houston in it. The Bodyguard, I think, is what I'm talking about. Dreadful film, don't go and watch it. It's not your Ricky Media for this week. If you watch it, I expect you to kill yourself. There's an interesting story about Iowa girls, and actually she was Minnesota girls and the Bodyguard, but yeah, we won't go into that now. So she was shielded from an angry crowd. Well, I'd be angry too if I was fucking there, because she's the Prime Minister of Australia and she needs to be arrested. Protesters have been demonstrating for indigenous rights nearby at the quote-unquote so-called Aboriginal Tent Embassy. Now, it's not a fucking so-called Aboriginal Tent Embassy, okay? It is an embassy. It is full of tents. And it's the Aboriginal Embassy. So, you have to go and look at the history. The Aboriginal people of Australia were basically dispossessed of their land when we arrived in 1788. We basically fucked them for a long time. Well, not me personally, but everyone else who turned up then. Decided that they basically weren't fit to live in this country. So we decided we'd go and, like, basically kill them all. Which wasn't a very nice thing to do, obviously. The Aboriginal people of Australia got really, really annoyed, as you rightly would, and decided they were going to form themselves an embassy, a sort of political arm, as it were, to basically try and pressure the Australian government into giving them rights. Rights as in, like, comparing them to other human beings on the planet, rather than rights as in, like, we'd like to have our land back. No, we're talking about the right to actually exist as a human being, not be considered flora and fauna. That's the kind of level of, like, arsehole-ness that the Australian government gets up to when you turn your back on it. So, yes, the so-called Aboriginal Pam Pam is real. A ramshackle, I don't know about ramshackle, I think it's quite nice, a ramshackle collection of tents and temporary shelters in the national capital, that's Canberra, that is the centre point of protests against Australia Day. It's not the centre point of protests against Australia Day. We're talking about, you know, like, there is no centre point of protest against Australia Day. Australia Day is a pile of shit, basically. Australia Day marks the arrival of the first fleet of British colonists in Sydney on January 26, 1788. Many Aborigines, and lots of other people will point out, call it Invasion Day because the land was settled without treaty to the traditional owners. Now, that's unlike, say, somewhere like New Zealand, where you had the Treaty of Waitangi, where the original people of the land were actually given, they actually said, yeah, we acknowledge you as existing as a member of the human race. That didn't happen in Australia. And there's a really interesting, I'm actually reading a really interesting book about the whole discovery of Australia. It's called The Fatal Shore. And it goes into the methodology behind what England and what the English aristocracy did in trying to set up a convict prison camp in Australia, what they were doing and why they were doing it. And it's a really interesting book, and I suggest you go and find a copy of it on some second-hand bookshop and or website bookshop. Secondhand book website, and get yourself a copy and have a read if you're remotely interested in Australian history and where this stuff all came from. It is slightly slanted, like every other historical book I've ever read, but it's still interesting. Australia Day, yeah, we did that already. Australia Day, who cares a shit? Abbott, that's Tony Abbott, he's a fascist bastard, appeared to be the target of the protesters who chanted shame and racist outside of the restaurant. That's because he should have some shame. He is shameful, and he is a racist, so that's not really very surprising, is it? The 10th Embassy celebrated its 40th anniversary on Thursday. Abbott had earlier angered Indigenous activists by saying it was time the embassy moved on. Well, maybe you could give them an embassy, and then they'll go and move into that instead, because every other fucking country's got one, and they don't deserve one, so why can't the Aboriginal people have one? You know, I'm sure they'd be much more qualified to have one, since they actually belong here, than every other foreign fucking government. Well, anyway, Gillard was unharmed and later hosted another Australia Day function for foreign ambassadors at an official residence. The only thing that angers me is that it distracted from such a wonderful event, Gillard told reporters. I am made of pretty tough stuff, and the police did a great job of bashing fucking old men and women, which is the only thing you can see in the picture. Okay, so go and have a look at the picture, and you will see there's one of the local Aboriginal elders, yeah, who's basically being pushed off a fucking step, yeah, and one other human being who I would distinct to say isn't a police officer, who was also getting shoved out of the way and rough-handled by the riot police, and probably federal police in Canberra. The whole thing is just a fucking joke, you know. It's just a joke. Now I have to make the story. Oh, there we go. So this one was another one sent to me by my lovely partner. God bless her soul, even though God isn't real. It's on the 9msn.com.au website. 9. What are you doing? GPS device. This went on because we were talking about last week. We were talking about, if you haven't got last week's show, you should go and download it. We were talking about GPS devices for offenders, specifically offenders who were doing naughty things like going around raping women and children at knife point. So my partner I was talking about this with, and which she was saying, oh, I found this article about GPS devices for offenders. I'll send it to you. So lo and behold, we've got a bit more additional information. GPS devices for offenders, not foolproof. This is the 31st of January, 2012. Queensland government has defended GPS monitoring devices after a dangerous sex offender removed his tracking bracelet and broke out of a low security facility. So not only did he manage to remove his tracking bracelet, he also managed to break out of the jail. Okay, he was in jail and he broke out. Now, I don't care whether it was low security or not. He was in the jail for doing something naughty, and now he's not in the jail anymore because he escaped. Now, why is the jail there? Because it doesn't seem to be working very well. Pretty obvious, I thought. Also, questions have been raised about the time it took police to warn the public about sex offender Andrew Clive Ellis, who allegedly assaulted women just hours after he absconded. I think we would realise that probably he did this, considering the nature of the person involved in the accusation. Police Minister Neil Roberts told the ABC Radio that about 70 sex offenders were currently under supervision orders, and that more than half of them were monitored by GPS. He admitted that bracelets weren't foolproof, but said Ellis's escape did not mean it. It was necessary to stop using them. Well, if they don't work, then you have to find something else that does work, if you're going to run around arresting people for doing, like, naughty things. These people have served their sentences, they've been released by our courts against their will. We've got responsibility to monitor them, he told the ABC. Did I read that right? These people have served their sentences, they've been released by courts against our will. We've got responsibility to monitor them. We've got a responsibility to monitor them. It's a strange sentence, I don't like that one. We're using GPS as an additional tool to enforce the order of the court, but it's certainly not foolproof. Mr. Roberts also defended a police decision to delay warning the public about Ellis until Tuesday afternoon. Ultimately, I have confidence in the Queensland Police Service's capability and the Queensland's corrective services to make those decisions, he said. However, Queensland's Deputy Police Commissioner had expressed concerns over the GPS devices. It certainly concerns me that a prisoner, a person who is classified in this way, who is wearing one of these bracelets, can find a way to remove it, he told reporters in Brisbane. Ellis removed the GPS bracelet, ankle bracelet, just before 1 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time, AEST, on Tuesday, and left the low security correctional facility at Wacol, southwest of Brisbane. He had been serving 5 years supervision order at the correctional services facility since January 13th, after spending 6 years behind bars for sexual assault, drugs and property offences. The 25-year-old allegedly knocked a 45-year-old female jogger to the ground and assaulted her at 17 Mile Rocks in Brisbane at 6:30 a.m. He was picked up by a police patrol what more do you have to fucking say, right? This person's on a fucking supervision order and they break out of jail and then they go on the first thing they do, 5.5 hours later, is go and assault someone. Do you really think this person should be allowed anywhere near the front door of the jail? Possibly not. I think this person requires a bit more of the Danish treatment, where we uncover the problems and get to the issues and solve them for the person. He was picked up by the police patrol in southern Brisbane, suburb of Acacia Ridge. Doesn't sound like it. Acacia Ridge. 8 hours later, just before 4:30 p.m. So he basically got picked up that afternoon. Earlier, police had launched a widespread manhunt for Ellis, with extra patrols and officers on pushbikes, horses, and doesn't that make it sound like fucking Australia? On pushbikes and horses. Like, what the fuck do we live in? And motorbikes were deployed, but at least we had a motorbike run around. Ellis's capture came shortly after police warned the public about him via a media conference after reportedly refusing to confirm the escape earlier in the day. The Department of Correctional Services had issued a statement to the media about Ellis's escape at 9 a.m. So the Department of Correctional Services say that this man has escaped, and the police refused to acknowledge this. The Liberal National Party, which is the same as the Liberal Party and the National Party, I don't know why they have three names, the Liberal National Party says it's unbelievable that the public warning was not issued until 8 hours after Ellis allegedly assaulted a woman. We need some answers from the ministers and the premier about why they can rush out feel-good statements about new police stations that take more than 8.5 hours to issue a warning to the public about dangerous sex offenders, Liberal National Party spokesman John Paul Longbrook. Imagine having a name like John Paul. All you need is fucking... I wonder if his kid's name John Paul George. Or maybe John Paul Ringo. John Paul George Ringo. Said in a statement. Ellis's escape was also exposed flaws in Labor's sexual offender laws, Mr. Lowbrock said. After 20 years of Labor, it raises the question, how come he was released in the first place? He said in a statement. The state government said it was seeking to help Ellis behind bars since March. Said it had been seeking to keep Ellis behind bars since March 8, but the courts ordered that he be released under strict supervision. Both Mr. Lucas and Queensland Premier Anna Bligh, I'm not going to go there, and the courts were wrong to release Ellis. I'm very angry about the case, Mrs. Bligh told reporters on the Gold Coast. The Queensland government took every possible legal action to keep this offender in prison. The courts decided to let him go, and frankly, it was the wrong decision. They didn't choose to let him go. He escaped from your goddamn correctional facility. She called the courts to align the community standards with deciding the fate of sexual offenders. It's time the courts heard the voice of the community on this, Miss Bly said. Well, yes, I wonder. Oh, I've got them the wrong way around. I apologise. Lovely lady who shares my... Here, this is Sean. Queenslander began GPS tracking by Christmas. It was updated. Oh, it was published on the 18th of August 2011. The Queensland Correctional Service Minister says the rollout of GPS tracking for released high-security sex offenders will begin by Christmas. But the Australian Lawyers Alliance says that the ministers believe it improves monitoring. Says that if the ministers believe it improves monitoring, then the state's controversial indefined sentencing laws should be repealed. So that's an interesting thing. There's a transcript. It's on the World Today. It's 3.5 minutes long. You have to go listen to the audio. It was quite interesting. So there was two stories, and they both were from... Oh, I got the first one off, and Kev sent me the second one. So they're both interrelated. One's from the ABC. They're both about airport body scanners being used in Australia. So there's going to be a no opt-out rule for airport body scanners. It's on the ABC website. Civil Libertarians. I really dislike that name. Civil Libertarians. We're fucking anarchists. Get it right. I'm sure they're not, but I just dislike the term. Civil Libertarians, are worried by a proposed legislation meaning passengers will not be able to opt out of undergoing full body scans at Australian airports. Yes, they will. Yes. The way that you opt out of undergoing a full body scan at an Australian airport is you don't go to an Australian airport. But anyway, irrespective of that. The federal government will introduce legislation this week so that technology can be rolled out in all of Australia's international airports. So it's only international airports. The move follows a trial in Sydney and Melbourne. Except for travellers with serious medical conditions, all passengers will have to go through the scanners if asked by airport staff. Civil Liberties Australia Director Tim Vine says the scanners will amount to an unnecessary digital strip search of citizens who want to travel. He says passengers should be allowed to request a pat-down. In the European Union, where they do allow these types of scanners, they have been issued a directive that says the government must provide citizens with an option to opt out, he said. We don't live in the fucking, United Socialist States of Europe. We live in Australia, so we don't quite get the same rulings. I'm sorry. We think that, as in the US and in Europe, people should have the option for opting for pat-downs rather than having to go through a digital strip search of a full-body scan. We all know that we live in the fucking, heinous state of fascism that is Australia, so why are we surprised when the government doesn't want us to do this? Transport Minister, I know this bloke, Anthony Albanese, he used to be my local Member of Parliament when I lived in Sydney, many, many years ago, before I travelled around England and became as elite and cool as I am now. But anyway, Transport Minister Anthony Albanese says people's bodies will appear only as outlines. An image is not able to be used, to be copied and will not be stored. How the fuck is it not able to be copied and will not be stored? Like, if it's an image on a VDU, then you can fucking copy it. The scanner shows a generic male outline, a generic female outline. It simply will identify the spots on the outline that is something that needs to be checked, Dr. Mr. Albanese told Sky News. Full body scanners were introduced at airports. You know how I was saying before that the BBC have really fucking like quaint ways of writing things as like the statement? Well, the ABC in Australia does exactly the same thing because their byline piece was perfectly safe. Fuck you. Full body scans were introduced at airports ramped up with security after the foiled 2009 plot where a Nigerian man boarded a plane with explosives in his underwear. Only a Nigerian man would do that. Their use in America has been criticised on health and privacy grounds, and flyers there can opt to receive a pat-down instead of going through the machines. But if you do, then the TSA official will, of course, write down your name and you get put on the blacklist, and then the Marine comes and asks for you from the back. But only one type of full-body airport scanner, the backscatter X-ray machine, which is used in some US airports, exposes individuals to ionising radiation. The federal government says that type of machine will not be used in Australia. The millimeter wave body scanners are perfectly safe, and one body scan is comparable to the passive exposure mobile phone used several meters away. How are you going to use a mobile phone that's several meters away? Strange statement, Mr. Albanese said in a statement. Mr. Vine says he was pleased to hear a safer and, if still intrusive, technology had been chosen, but these devices have no track record of making airports safer. Well, no, nothing does. He says the security agent, well, apart from shutting in airports, of course, it's a bit like every other form of anything. If there are no customers there, then they can't go wrong. He says that the security agent in the US was able to smuggle a handgun through a full body scanner multiple times. There's an interesting report I'd love to read. What we've seen is a huge amount of money, a huge amount of focus thrown towards what's called in the US security theater. It's an expensive product just to show that something is being done, whether or not that something is effective, he said. In response to each incident, we were told that it wouldn't happen again because of the technology that was in place before it. New technology is brought in to assure us that everything is safe. Well, if someone wants to blow up the goddamn world, they're gonna fucking do it, right? It's not gonna be changed by some tight ass bit of fucking technology they put in an airport, yeah? I don't know why we bother. I really don't sometimes. But there is no guarantee that the new device will protect you. Well, of course there won't be. It's a fucking full body scanner. How is that going to help you? And that's where we've given up in terms of civil liberties, and our privacy is a real loss. We don't have any privacy anymore because we lost it all when we voted for Mr. Anthony Albanese many, many years ago. I didn't. Mr. Albanese said that tens of thousands of Australians have volunteered to be checked during the trial at Sydney and Melbourne airports. We have the most secure and safe aviation record in any country in the world, and we need to make sure that we keep that up. He said, the public would rather there were not security threats, but given that there are, excuse me, but given there are, they need to know the government is doing all it can in its power. There's also a miniature goat boom going on. My God, that's exciting. Miniature goat breeders said that animals are providing popular as pets, but they eat more than grass. Well, of course they are. They're not graziers, you twat ass fits. Like, what do we think? Continuing on with the story. Thanks, Kev, for the thing. It just depresses me. It came from Travel News. It's in the Herald Sun. Trusted fucking reporting that way it ever was. Actually, it's the Sunday Mail, sorry. Full-body scanners roll out at all Australian airports, international airports, after trial. And there's a picture of a very, very fetching lady who's standing there looking like a bloody, you know, prisoner going to Guantanamo with a massive smile on her face. She's an airport employee in the US. That's the reason why. Passengers at airports across Australia were forced to undergo full-body scans or banned from flying under new laws to introduce into the federal parliament this week. In a radical $28 million security overhaul, banned from flying. Think about that. You'll be banned from flying under the new law, okay? But not other forms of transport. Ba-dum-cha. Think about that for a bit. In a radical $28 million security overhaul, that's ridiculous, even in Australian dollars, $28 million would be enough to do I don't know what in this country, but it's surely fucking too much to be spending on scanners. The scanners will be installed at the international airports in July and follows a trial in Sydney and Melbourne in August and September last year. The government is touting the technology as the most advanced available, while equipment able to detect metallic and non-metallic items beneath clothing. They already have those, I'll point out. It's also keen to allay concerns raised over travel online forums where passengers would appear nude on security screens when similar scanners were introduced in US airports. Oh, no naked people for all the federal police to look at. What a shame. The technology will show passengers on a screen as stick figures of neither sex. Ooh, amorphic stick figures? Even XKCD can get that right. Jesus Christ, like, that's just appalling. $28 million on a goddamn computer screen that can't even, like, represent sex on a bloody, you know, stick figure. It's ridiculous. The system has been approved by the Privacy Commission. Well, that's because that's a government agency. They don't actually give a shit. The images will also be discarded after each passenger has been cleared. Well, that's a bit interesting in the last report. I thought they weren't going to be saved. The proposed Aviation Security Amendment, the Screening Bill 2012, will make it mandatory for any passenger selected to participate in undergoing a body scan. The No Scan, No Fly amendment closes the loophole in the legislation that will allow passengers to request a pat-down instead of having to pass through a metal detector. And of course, you know who the first person through the metal detector is going to be. Next time I go flying, it's going to be me, of course. A big tick on my file says, fuck this person up. Annoy him greatly. Transport Minister Anthony Albanese said mandatory body scans were necessary to ensure the safety of airports. Not the safety of people at airports, but the safety of the airport itself. I think the public understands we live in a world where there are threats to security, and experience shows that we want a peace of mind that comes with knowing government is doing all that it can, he said. Double speak if ever I heard it. Government has compared the strength of the radio waves emitted from the body scanners as the same as those from the regular mobile phone usage several miles away, to be even better. Only passengers with serious medical conditions will be exempted from the scan. Ooh, I wonder what a serious medical condition is when it comes to being not scanned. More than 23,000 dullards took part in a body scan trial from August 2nd to the 19th in Sydney and September the 5th to the 30th in Melbourne. The scanners will roll that in out at 8 international gateway airports in Adelaide, Brisbane, Cairns, Gold Coast, Melbourne, Perth and Sydney. That's all of them, by the way. The government has enlisted the same company, L3 Communications, used in the US to supply body scanners. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? That was all the news for today, so we'll roll on with some more exciting music. Have fun, and I'll see you in a little bit. Yay, I'm back. That was exciting, wasn't it? Thank you very much to Iron Angel, the extra tracks. You are a legend, sir. And also for answering my bogus questions about making tomahawks today in IRC, because we were talking about manufacturing of tomahawks after I was watching some videos by Dave Canterbury. Pathfinder, I don't know what. I got my missus onto the dictionary and tried to get her to find me some way of making fun of Dave Canterbury and his Pathfinder, because, like, Ray Mears is easy because it rhymes with Fatty Smears, but Dave Canterbury, I just come up with a blank. My brain's a bit frazzled. Not enough sleep. But yeah, but I don't know, you know, some people like him, some people don't. Anyway, the discussion today was Google knows too much about you. And it came out of the fact that I was doing some Googling about on the interwebs, and I was looking at torrent sites, and this popped up. It was really interesting. The world's known search engine, Google, has never been a champion of personal privacy, but it seems to have finally overstepped the mark with introducing encompassing services. Google has announced a few days ago that a major shakeup is afoot to a number of its services. Actually, the search engine seems to switch from peeping Tom behavior to something close to full-on stalker. The website claimed it was getting rid of a lot of the red tape that provides seamless services in between the different facets of its business. The main part of it is relatively harmless. For instance, it would mean that the keywords in the search engine are being used to suggest certain videos when you visit, i.e. YouTube. Press the button there, make all the things go away. This is not something users should be worrying about. However, taking into account the fact that your Google Plus account, your location, and even your Gmail content will also feed into searches, this may threaten to cross the line from convenient to plain creepy. Actually, the way Google behaves is expected to change quite substantially in March. The company strongly believes that there is a lot of cool things it is able to do by combining data across its products. For instance, it might appear useful for you to get a reminder that you were late for some appointment based on your location. I'll just continue. However, aside from all this care about users, it is still a sign of the company's ever-increasing influence that is generally concerning. Indeed, taking into account the firm's alleged abusive position with the information spying debacle and other things, the level of trust Google demands is really phenomenal. Phenomenal always reminds me of Phenomenal, which reminds me of the Muppets song, but there you go. Google seems to combine all of your particularities, including social life, search habits. Just think about what the average male searches for in a day, and you will wonder why you give this information away. Anyway, and work in an attempt to be with you at every moment. Meanwhile, no one can notice that there is not much to be done to tackle Google's changes. Undoubtedly, the main reason for Google to be so keen on delving further into the users' lives is reaping greater reward from advertising revenues. The search engine may keep claiming that it doesn't sell your personal data, but it will benefit from knowing about you for sure. Industry experts point out this can appear the start of a backlash against. Google. I don't think it makes sense, but anyway, I think you get the meaning. If you consider the way the search engine has emerged relatively unscathed from serious privacy breaches previously. God, the mouthful. It might take much for the internet users to shift away, but taking into account the catastrophic feeling of the engine's latest intrusions, public possessions could start shifting. I read the whole thing out because it wasn't very long. And I had lots of things to say about this. The first thing, of course, is that if you go and look at Google, you should really go and do a search for the fact that Google is a company. Now, it's a company that's listed on the stock exchange. Now, if you have even a blind bit of knowledge that requires you to go and search on Google to find out that Google is a company and listed on the stock exchange, that should tell you that the company is based on making money, okay? Because that's what all companies are based on doing, okay? Not so much small businesses, perhaps. Yeah, they're there to provide services, but sometimes, not always. But large corporations, a la Google, are basically there to make money for their stockbrokers, for their shareholders. Now, the way in which Google makes money is by taking the data that you give it, okay, because you give it data, okay, and it gives you data back. So you go and search for something, right? You know, you go and look up, like, you know, bronies, furry fandom, and suddenly Google is going, okay, well, like, Harlequin is interested in bronies and furry fandom. So what we're going to do is we're going to take what he suggested he might be interested in. We're going to catalog it against his name, his IP address, where he is and what the hell he's doing, and the time of day it is, and then we're going to feed him some search results back again. And then we're going to watch where he goes from there. Now, at this point, you should just sort of start going, okay, this is a bit heinous. Why in God, like, you wouldn't walk down the goddamn street talking about your private life with strangers and giving away business cards or sheets of paper that say, I went and looked at this, you want to know all about it, and then sell me something from it. So, what the hell are we going to do? Okay? Now, I do remember back in the early days, back when I was learning some really cool things, about the exciting world of Google when it first started. It used to be a really amazing company. It probably still is when you actually work there. The problem, of course, is that they somehow got really greedy along the way. So now, it doesn't work anymore. So there's a few things you can do to change what Google does for you. The first thing I think you should do is move away from using any Google service that you can get away from. So I would suggest that you move away from using such things as Google Chrome. I would also suggest that you stop using things like Google Mail. Why would you use Google Plus? I don't know. Why would you do that? Why do you need to give a website a bit more information about you and your private life? There's a lovely program that if you go and use, as you should be using Firefox, of course, and you're going to install, of course, the obvious things. You're going to have your ad block and all that sort of stuff and blah, blah, blah. But beyond that, you're also going to go and install a program called Optimize Google. Optimize Google, one of the things that Optimize Google allows you to do is to surreptitiously feed Google really shitty information about you. And this does an awful lot to prevent you from being followed by Google, to the least amount you can. There are other things, of course, you can do. And, you know, most of them should be blatantly obvious to anyone who's listening to this radio show. Why aren't you running your own mail server? You know, why are you relying on the chat function from Google to go and communicate when there's IRC or Jabber? How much effort does it take to go and use an open source response to not only Google Plus but also Facebook? You know, they are out there now. It amazes me that people still use the services of Google, apart from trying to force rip it off. One of the other great functions of the internet is a company, or is a site called Scroogle. And Scroogle is a add-on it guts the hell out of Google, and they promise to not hold on to your information. I don't know how much I believe that, but hey, it's a good start. The other thing, of course, you can do is, you know, mix it up. Don't just follow Google's blind path. You know, there's plenty of other search engines. You know, if you're looking on Wikipedia because you just want the Wikipedia article, just set it up so that it goes automatically Wikipedia. Yeah? If you can do this, then do it. If you can't do it, then get some information, get some knowledge, and go and do it for yourself. I have 20 minutes to go. I'm going to pause the bat now, and I'm going to come back with the rest of the show when I plug myself into the wall socket to get recharged. And we're back. See, I should have just left it running the whole time. You could have just listened to the frog song outside. There's a lovely frog out the back of the yard of my house who's busy communicating with me. But I have to change my window again, so hold on, and I'll just go over here and press that button. And go down here a bit. I really need a printer. Works. Hey, exciting. So yeah, so change Google habits. Do something about it. You obviously need to. Because if you're anything like the rest of the world, then Google knows far too much about you. The Rangers Quartermaster Kit review for the week was woolen blankets, 100% wool blankets, military in style with a pin. It came about because I was looking at wool blankets this week, and also because wool blankets are an important thing you should, of course, keep around you at regular times. Why is a wool blanket so important? Well, okay. Wool is an amazing natural fiber that, if wet, will hold 80% of the heat in, as opposed to any other man-made fiber. That changes depending on which kind of wool it is. You can have alpaca wool as well as sheep wool. And you can do some interesting things with a wool blanket. Like, not only can you obviously hop under a wool blanket, you can also use it to lie upon if you want to go outside and it's grassy and horrible and not very warm. You can also use it as a form of clothing or outerwear. You can, of course, sew it up and turn it into a real coat should you need to. Or this would be a waste of a blanket, obviously. Perhaps you could get some old blankets and cut those up that were already broken. I think the thing that I would look out for in a wool blanket is making sure it was thick enough. So you really want a wool blanket from a European country, a cold country, or somewhere way up north, so that it is extra thick. And, you know, it doesn't take an awful lot to stick a wool blanket in the back of your car in the boot and leave it there. And then when the car breaks down and you start to fucking freeze, you realize why the hell you listened to this radio show and you think, oh, hey, Harlequin was right. Yeah, okay, you know, the bottle of water and the space blanket didn't really work. My ass is still freezing cold. Wool blankets are the greatest invention known to mankind for this week. And in the show notes this week, there is an exciting Pathfinders, David Canterbury Pathfinders video. And we're finally not being sold something. It's finally something that, it's not something that he endorses. Well, he endorses it, but it's like second-hand and can't be bought from him, seemingly. Maybe he can, but I don't know. So the YouTube link was Victor Kilo Sierra Charlie Micah Foxtrot Kilo Micah. And you have capitals in there, so it's capital V, K, capital S, C, S. SCM, capital F, capital K, capital K, capital M, capital M. Other interesting stuff that was pointed out to me. I've gone from calendars this week, I've gone to other interesting mathematical functions. Lovely old Kev was, I was talking to Kev and I didn't really understand stuff. But I asked Kev, which way round does the greater than sign go? This is something that has always confused the hell out of me. And no one ever has been able to explain it in a reasonable manner. But the pointy end of the greater than symbol goes towards the smaller object, and vice versa, the pointy end on the less than symbol points to the small element. So Kev said in IRC, pointy end is small. And I said, so I point the pointy end towards the smaller thing, i.e. 4 is less than 5, or 100 is greater than 1. And Kevin said, yes in Scottish, which is I. And I said ta in Welsh, because I like speaking Welsh, ta. And I said, pointy end goes to small. Never had anyone explain it like that. So thanks to Kevin for the elaborate explanation of how the bloody hell greater than less than symbols work. It's another one of life's mysteries that have been solved. I'm just so excited. Recommended this week is you have to go and sit in IRC for at least half an hour this week and chat to us all. Lots of fun things happen in IRC. If you just turn up, you'll enjoy them all. There's also the forums, but to get on the forum, you have to go to the IRC channel and talk to me and say that you're a nice person. There's no linkage yet because Kevin hasn't uploaded it yet, but I spent all of last night talking to Kevin and Neodemi and Graffin and Iron Angel, and I think that was all of us. And me, of course. We were all on You Can't Say That on Radio. So you should go and listen to the latest episode of You Can't Say That on Radio. It's been like 3 years since we made one. And it was very funny and very, very enlightening and rather ridiculous. But for utter bullshit, it was quite funny. Graffin pointed out in IRC, after listening to the show, that I forgot to make fun of Scientology. So here's an extra funny vid that he posted to me that made me laugh so hard I cried. And me and Kevin were talking in IRC about the blog of a British man living in an American jail system and the things that he went through after being arrested and tried, or arrested and then thrown in prison, and then later sentenced to he was sent to maximum security jail, and what his life was like in American jail. And he wrote about it, and had letters. I think he had letters sent out for him, or he got letters out somehow from jail, and they were published by his family in the United Kingdom to explain the life of a prisoner in a jail. I point out that he wasn't in jail for doing anything too heinously wrong, as far as I could see. He wasn't a, you know, axe-wielding, raping, murderer of children, or small furries. Yeah, I hope you've enjoyed the show. It's been lovely to talk to you. And I don't know what else I've got to say. So, yeah. Oh, that was the other thing. No, thank you to Sumerian for putting the show last week. And giving me access to the Rant Radio Talk channel. So if you're listening to this on Rant Radio, you should go and say thanks to Sumerian. And go listen to Mother's Up, obviously. And if you don't know who I am, then I'm Harlequin. This has been fun. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please, of course, remember that the only thing limits you is your own belief. Enjoy yourselves, and I'll talk to you all next week. Ta-ra! Ha ha ha!